November 14, 2013,
FPOP. He may get on a little early if it's 9:15 or 9:30, but I don't think it's quite on yet. Probably it's only 5 after.
Okay. So who's on the phone? Russ Kiefer, you on there? Anybody?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hey, Russ.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else?
Special delivery.
Besides Burston.
Keep going. Keep going.
More specific state.
Oh, that can't be it.
Good phone.
That's it? God, nobody's calling in for my birthday.
Yeah,
okay, in person.
That's what
we're
talking about.
They're avoiding it.
They came in person.
All right, well, let's go around the room. Starting with Ann.
Ann Sutter, Walla Walla.
Lisa Wright, Corey.
John Bailey, Walla Walla.
Scott Benton, BPA.
Eric Rogers, Nell Fisheries.
Neil Zindel, Corps, John Day.
Ben Hausman, Corps, Bonneville.
Derek Faber, Oregon Fish and Wildlife.
Bob Cordy, Corps of the Dalles.
Greg Moody, Corps of Engineers.
Scott Fielding, Corps, Walla Walla.
Trevor Conner, NOAA Fisheries.
Robert Stansel, Corps, Field Unit.
John Erisich, Corps.
Nathan Zorich, Corps, Field Unit.
Eric Ockersmith, Corps, Walla Walla.
Bill Evelyn, NOAA Fisheries.
Oh, Tom Walsh, Griffith.
And Bernard Clatt, Corps.
Tammy Mackey, Burns Assistant.
Excellent. Now let's go over the agenda. Is there anything to add on? This should be an agenda 1 of 17, I believe.
Page 1 of 17. It's got page numbers now.
Isn't that awesome? 1 of 17.
Don't consider 3 years of trainer to get that.
I know.
Page numbers are hard.
Page numbers, yeah.
Old, my brain is feeble.
Yeah.
Can't remember as much.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm not aware we have anything to add.
Nothing to add?
No.
Noah? You guys got anything to add? What?
Nothing more. Thank
you. Nothing more.
Do you like that?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Well, let's approve September's minutes. Are there any comments? Whatever happened to Dave Wilt? I haven't seen him forever. Does anybody know the scoop? U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
He doesn't come
to
He's around.
He's around?
He's
just not.
I think he's just
not. Not allowed to come to FPOM anymore.
Thank you.
Must be shy in the budget.
I hear you. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to consider the meeting minutes approved for September. Ching. Let's get right into the action. The heat of the action from Walla Walla.
Well, so we've got the one item. And Duane, are you on yet? Yeah, so I think we'd like to maybe kick and let you guys go through Portland here first and then come back to Walla Walla, since we have Scott Benton ask us to have our chief of technical branch call in just to give a little bit better background on the Unit 1 time frame as well as some specifics. So I'd like to just wait until he gets on the phone before we start into that topic. So,
he was shooting for 9:30.
Yeah, he's shooting for 9:30, so I think it's like 20 minutes. So, Vern, if you maybe could just keep going. Mm-hmm. What do you have for action items? You want me to talk so you're eating?
I don't have any action items.
No action items.
So can we make an action item?
My action. Get out of here.
Okay, well, we could go our updates.
I'm just saying, can we make an action item?
Get more
unit, that unit, I don't know, 11 that no longer exists. Are we gonna get, can we get an update on that? I'm just getting to the point of being utterly ridiculous.
Well, it's easy update.
No update. I mean, are you guys going to, are we ever going to get unit back? Or should we talk to North Wasco?
Yes.
Well, can we get North Wasco to maybe put a turbine in there?
Yeah,
that might get things going. I'm just tired of this issue.
So, Tom, we'll put it on the agenda next time.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Put an action item on for next time. Yeah. That's an update.
All right, let's get a happy Tom here.
Yeah. No, it's not going to happen. Well, my daughter's coming back from outdoor school. I've had 4 days of quiet.
Wheat and sugar.
This is as good as it gets. I know. No, she's coming back today. My life will be awesome.
No.
You could be grumpy tomorrow.
Well, that happy birthday mood lasted long, didn't it?
Yeah. Happy what?
Happy birthday mood.
Yeah. All right, so we'll add that on next time for Tom.
Yes.
Okay. You want us to
Skeleton
go?
Bay?
Skeleton Bay, there you go.
Yeah.
I'll go for that.
We can move into our action items then.
Well, Cora, your updates?
Okay. So, yeah.
Updates at 3?
Updates 3.11, Lower Granite, NSE 1 should be NSE 3. Essentially, that was an outage. It was in Appendix A. Ladder was down on October 9th for 2 hours to take out the bulkhead. There was a contract in place. An emergency was put in. We expect to put that bulkhead after it's repaired in, hopefully at the end of the winter work window. So that's why it went out when it did. We didn't notice any issues, just an update. Greg, I think you were going to give the next one, which is just an update again on the Little Goose pit tag.
Little Goose pit tag, well, they had to redo their HVAC system for the juvenile fish facility and turn off electricity and valve, turn off electricity to pit tag detectors and full flow in the flume. However, the crew, the SMP people, are doing a 100% sampling. So later the next day, they manually sample the fish. End of story. Basically, it's done. It was a real quick outage.
Okay. So
number 3.1.3, 13 IHR, 11 9 1 Disconnect. We first talked this to F1 back in July or June, probably, for an outage to change to July time period. We had comments feedback from Ed Holmes saying July is a bad time. Well, the Chinook was good. It was a good time for doing it. Sockeye, yeah, probably going on. So after we delayed it, we delayed it to the 4th of
November.
It's going on as scheduled, as approved by Ed Holmes, and it should be done today. It was 4th to the 22nd, but it should be done today.
Okay, and I guess I'll do the next one, 3.1.4. John Bailey sent out an MFR on this and had some comments back from Gary Frederick, said he would like to have it brought up in the meeting. And this is when we had a storm go through the area. We had a power outage, and then the ladder fish pumps were turned off because of our potable water supply. There was a link. And so the path forward that we have there, so potable water supply supplies cooling water for the fish pumps, and so that was the link that affected us. And the project is taking what they feel is an aggressive approach to fix all about that potable water supply, so our needs will be part of that. And I've kind of been working with the chief of ops, and he's basically, they're putting it in AMRIP. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of that, but that's where we tee up like kind of large cost items, capital items, that, and then prioritize them annually. And so we'll be able to weigh in from the fish impact benefit as to why we would like to see that get done. But I think they think that probably in the next couple of years, if things don't get cut out from under everyone, that they will get this upgrade in place. So the likelihood of having something like this happen again will no longer exist.
Can we keep that as a, recurring topic?
Yeah, just updates as we get them. Because that's what I've got here is we recognize the need and want to replace the power lines, poles, and cross arms and have started looking at prices and such. We are talking about the path forward to correct the issue. I don't believe we have a date, but we will let you know as soon as we got something tapped in. So, yeah, when I get an update, okay, I can pass it along to you.
Yeah, that'd be good because that's pretty serious. If we start, that's a critical part of the facility.
Yeah, and I think we're trying to track things that are critical in terms of reliability and make sure that those are highlighted and prioritized. So, and that's a place where we can use people's support to try to maintain those being prioritized as well.
That's so, let's keep it as a topic in here so that until we get that resolved, that little one.
So right now we won't have, I don't think we'll have to put fish dollars towards it, the route we're going, which is kind of nice that the bigger process will take care of it and will take care of our issues, but yeah. I hear your message.
What month do you think you'll have an update?
I don't know.
March, April?
Well,
instead of keep putting it on the agenda,
do is just track it, and so what I'll just do is make a note to track. I'll just like do a sticky note back at my office that when I get an update from Bill Gearbox to bring it to FPOM.
Okay.
I agree. Just having it on here every month. We started that with some other stuff, and then people think we got to give an update even though there's nothing to say.
Yeah. There's no reason to do that, but I hate losing track of things too, just because they're out of sight, out of mind.
No, you know, I think one of the things that we want to be tracking is our adult ladders at all the facilities, and so maybe what we could do is after we go through the winter work window, think about just an overall summary of reliability for each, at least for Walla Walla, where we think we have some weak points just to be tracking on.
Do you think that would be March or April meeting?
Yeah, either or. Sometime after we come out of the winter work window, you know, there will be some things that we'll have assumed would be done and something will have happened and it won't have been done, and maybe we can just broaden the awareness there.
So, Tammy, could you give an update for Walla Walla after the in-water work period?
On, yes.
So just can I put it on the agenda for that?
For April.
Because I will not be giving updates.
No. We're trying to get you back into this conversation.
I'm paying attention.
I don't know. Anything else on that one?
Like Bonneville Unit 11, every 3 months we should have at least have an automatic update of where we are.
That'll be clear.
Every 3 years we should have an update.
There you go. That's like an update. This is what, year two? Four? So you got two more years for that one.
Five. It's 2008.
So next year.
Well, we expect, and I don't know if Carl will call in, that we'll have more information on the McNary ladder at that time. They are planning to try to dewater an area that hasn't been dewatered, that collection channel area in there, just to see what kind of condition things are in so that they can go out and, again, put in AMRIP, which is just a large database for us that's used for providing the justification when someone wants funding and also prioritizing. And so we expect that there'll be some new entries specific to the McNary ladder put in there. I think with that, unless anybody has any other questions on that, that was one of those things that just kind of happened. It wasn't anything that was on our radar till that storm went through. We could probably move on to the next one. Greg, I think you were just going to cover 3.1.5, update on the November dive.
November 21st dive at McNary is going to be for simple notification out last month. Got it back. And it's basically for to look at the entrance, the way it presently looks, where they can modify the entrance and put in the lamprey passage structure in there. And that's passing at McNary Dam, SFEW2 entrance.
So they're not actually going to be putting it in now. They're going in to take measurements so that it can be fabricated and put in there.
They want to do this to look at the current measurement to see what exactly is there at this time. And double check the measurements of the sill height, too, at this time. There's a question on actually weir elevation, even though we did change it earlier this year in the FPP, but they want to double check that out also to get a true measurement. But this is to fabricate the structure in the month of December prior to the outage so that they can get it all done in the winter 30-day work period. And that's the reason for that.
There's still no effect to unit operations?
No effects to unit operations as far as the last communication I gave, and I probably sent it to you also on so really, it's, unless it's a big scene.
We're sensitive to that one.
And and just a follow-up question to that, could you maybe suggest as far as, so it sounds like this is to go in and evaluate. We recently did this at Bonneville Dam, putting in a structure. Any ideas on what that installation might look like? I guess, I mean,
worse than what you did at Bonneville.
We're not going to hang it on.
What's that?
In other words, this one's stupid simple. This is the Yugo. You just dealt with the Cadillac. We're now putting in the
okay,
Yugo.
So we've got a Yugo.
Which one works better?
This one's more than a Yugo.
But
it's a lot easier. It's a Pinto?
To hear you say even Yugo, I mean, even to get a Yugo in or a Pinto, sometimes it might be interesting.
It's sort of a Chevy, I think.
Right, but I'm just curious as far as operations go.
No stick shift.
One thing that we're going to be curious to see, and we haven't heard back yet, Doug, is just if this thing fails, whether they still have in place a way that this can readily be removed in season. And we haven't got an answer to that yet. We have asked the Lamprey Group that, because that was early on in the process, at least from an operations standpoint, that was put out there, that, hey, this there's a problem here. We need to be able to get this thing out. You know, yeah, but we're not yet aware that some of those things, like a divot crane or whatever, have been kept in the contract. And so we just about a week ago, we requested information on that.
Well, those are, I share your concern because, I guess back to Bonneville, I mean, are we going to need a barge, a floating platform in there? Would we have any modified unit operations limiting units off spilling? I'm just curious. It sounds like those questions, those answers may not be known at this time, but they're being explored.
How about an update at Fairwig on that?
Yeah, that seems like a issue. Sure, we
can. Definitely. Fairwig would be after the 21st.
Yeah. I just think using the Bonneville flume as an example of what was recently done and challenging, it might be interesting to explore those same issues with this widget. Or Hugo.
Yeah, this is a lot simpler issue than Bonneville. It really is. I mean,
should that give me comfort when you say that? I mean
who do you think you're?
If I were to say that to you, how would you feel if I were to say, yeah, don't worry about it?
Okay, you are the Corps of Engineers.
Yeah.
Kick your guy Doug. He's the one brought this one up.
Zip info.
There you go.
Zip it. There's no water spot.
I think that's it for us.
We'll quote you on that.
Greg, do you have
one? I'm not
the other thing that we brought to the maintenance for all the fish ladders in the Walla Walla district. It was sent in for last month's consideration. We're going to go ahead with our plan anyway, but just to reassure everybody, there's no two ladders at one project out at the same time. So that's the important part.
That is very good. Some granite.
I gotta bring this up. Can you show everybody your shoes?
These shoes back up.
You've got
wow. Oh,
yeah. Wow. Shoes. Yeah.
Is it shoes?
He knew he's coming to Portland.
Like socks.
That's right. You are in Portland, so I guess I'll let you out.
They won't let me wear shorts, so I can wear shoes.
You actually have those in the wall?
Yeah. They don't wear these in the office only.
So funny. Sorry.
Hey, for us on the phone, I demand a photo be posted to the agenda if we're going to show off shoes.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't worry,
here it comes. It's coming.
All right. Great shoes.
Okay, we're going to do the updates and then for Portland, and then we're going to jump and have Derek talk about 15 mile. Depending on
Wayne.
Oh,
see if Wayne
actually,
is on.
We can do this in 5 minutes then.
Okay.
Updated water dewatering plans at Bonneville. I know Trailer was working on it while he's detailed with me, so now that he's back, is he knocking those out?
Should be done.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll get those posted or sent out?
Yeah, and probably send this afternoon, actually.
All right.
What's that? What
is
that?
Dewatering plans.
Oh, dewatering plans.
Yeah. The ice and trash sluiceway, when we're doing the lamprey installation work, Gary was out there, noticed it was a little bit off. So has anything been done since looking at the forebay? We had a hard constraint on the forebay elevation. And
yeah, well.
So it's something that you want to bring up and look at, or?
It was really more of a forebay issue at the time, and we were trying to maximize that sluiceway operation, and yet we had a forebay of like 72. So that got 72.3 or something like that. So sill elevation 70, that gives us 2 feet or a little more on the deepest entrances. And then the automated entrances were about a half a foot above 70. So they
were functioning?
Less than 2 feet, which is lower than the criteria for that time. Not really a problem for the, I mean, the project is what it is, but with forebay that low, that sluiceway is not operating very well. Especially if we're trying to get adult fallbacks to fall back through it. Fish that are predestined to go downstream for whatever reason, if they're going downstream, I have my doubts about those fish going over a 2 foot opening like that. Because the way those are set up, I mean, there's the sill, but then there's also a gate out in front of that, so it's actually a fairly shallow, long distance that those fish have to go through. And I don't know, but I'd say behaviorally, that's probably a bad route if I was to think about it. Fish going backwards over a small route like that, like to get caught up in a rock someplace and goes a water ball. So can't imagine that behaviorally they're going to accept that as readily as they would if it was 4 feet. So the issue is really more of a four-bay. When we're in a situation where when we're really relying on that sluiceway like we were in the case of the Lamprey work, we should have that four-bay up at a level that's at least 74 feet. We've been back and forth around this, but we were relying on that sluiceway as the major route for fallback fish, and I don't think it was doing a very good job of it. So that's my opinion.
Are you talking about doing that only when there's powerhouse falling priority?
Yeah, when we're in a situation where we're really relying on that powerhouse for powerhouse one priority, normally we're at powerhouse two priority that time of year, so it's not an issue. We've got the corner collector, well, it's not running, but we have a screen system in. So, that's guiding some of the adult fallbacks. In this situation, no screens, sluiceway is the only other route of passage at that powerhouse, and with 2 feet or less of opening, I doubt that that's very effective. We know it's not that effective for kelts anyway, even when it's running optimally. So I guess my point is that I don't like that situation where we had it set up. I don't know how we can do better, but I think the best thing is that at least under those kind of circumstances, we should have a hard constraint on that four bay of something more than 72 feet.
Gary, I have a question on that. Would it also be a good idea to have a hard constraint prior to the corner collector being open for kelts? To increase the efficiency of the sluiceway?
For the sluiceway itself?
Yeah, for kelts prior to the typical trigger, what, March 17th?
Well, it's what we don't know is what the efficiency is of the sluiceway at various depths, and that's right. A problem. All I'm saying is that when it's down 2 feet, I think that's not enough. I mean, you can stand there and look at it, and it's, with the clear water that we have, which, we had clarity of like 7+ feet, I mean, it goes beyond the scale of the measuring device. So very clear water and broad daylight, and you've got somewhere about that much water going over it over a fairly long distance. I suppose if an adult was really looking for it, they might go through it, but the odds of them going down through those fairly shallow intakes is probably pretty high.
Has there any been research done on that?
Not with fallback adults like that. No.
Well, I mean, it was with kelts.
It was a kelt study.
Mm-hmm.
And efficiency was so I'm hearing 2.5.
It was poor for
greater than 2.5 foot.
Yeah, I mean we should. Yeah, at least 2.5. Well, we should at least maintain the 2.5 foot on the automated gates. That's criteria. So that means that you have a 73 probably.
Should we just close those gates?
And we can just not run powerhouse one and spill. Yeah, that'd be great. That's okay with me.
I mean, it still has.
I would rather have spill and not have that powerhouse run at all.
The problem is it still has a move, and this is a new constraint. So let's look into it.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to. I can't agree to anything right now.
No, I don't.
Well, it's a recommendation right now.
Yeah, then just
it's a case
it up
by case.
It's an issue. It's,
deal with it well, case by case.
I don't think it's not the right situation for these kind of circumstances when we're relying on that
so
powerhouse as a primary route.
How do we capture that?
You want to have more gates open?
Yeah.
I
know, but
I don't think we can.
In future,
well, maybe we can. Yeah. We may be able to. They're all going to be shallow no matter what you do.
My memory
is the problem. I think if they're not going to buy it.
So it's not the volume.
I don't think it's the volume. I think it's really the depth of those gates. They're already pretty shallow. Even at 2.5 feet, that's pretty shallow. But at least that's criteria. We weren't even meeting that. So at least we should meet criteria. And I can point at that and say, hey, do it. But that criteria to me is actually kind of on the shallow side too. If we're in that situation, we're really like, okay. So
all right.
What?
Got your recommendation. Thank you.
So let's go to Fitterweek next.
Yeah.
Should we do some research on this, or are we just going to jump on it?
Well, I can put a change form in.
Well, I know what we'll probably do is just forget about it. That's typical.
Until next year.
We are over 50 now.
What else is new?
Yeah. Let's jump to the phone and deal with your Walla Walla issue.
Okay, thanks. So I had an email from Tom Lors back after the September meeting with an inquiry that he sounded like he shared with some other members of FPOM, basically asking for an update on the Unit 1 turbine repair schedule, replacement repair, to move it from a fixed blade back to a Kaplan at Lower Granite. He also inquired about that same schedule at Lower Monumental. And so I think if we could start there, over the course of me inquiring throughout our building for the timeline and some of the many elements that go into scheduling this type of a change, it seemed that it would be to everyone's benefit if we had someone that had a really strong technical understanding of those elements to talk about that time frame. And so our chief of the technical support branch and operations, Dwayne Weston, was on the phone. And Dwayne, would you want to speak, I guess, specifically to kind of some of the elements related to Unit 1 at Lower Granite? Many of those are similar for LOMO, and I think their interest is primarily Granite, but also Lower Monumental in terms of the timing when we'll start that. I did let slip back in October through TMT that it looked like we were likely to be able to move Lower Granite scheduling ahead, and so I think you guys have had Doug Bouse mention that just so that you have some idea that we've made some progress since the last meeting with your request. But is that a good enough introduction for you to just give a little brief, Dwayne, on some of the elements that were involved when the request came in from the regional fish managers to see what we could do in terms of moving forward the schedule for the Lower Granite Unit 1 work rehab in order to get it done sooner to better facilitate issues so that if we were to have a warm summer like we had this year that we would have that unit available. So are you ready to talk, Dwayne? Are you still here?
Oh, sorry, I forgot to take the mute button off. Apologize. I prepared a kind of a few thoughts, and I thought I'd introduce myself a little bit first because I prepared a few thoughts because it's a little awkward being on the other end of a phone call from a group full of people. So once I get started talking, I'm hopefully, Anne, going to hit all those points that you were talking about there, and really try to lay out the entire survey of all of those things you talked about: cranes, Lower Monumental, Lower Granite, BLH units, and how all those things go together. But you know, first to start out, I guess since I have not met most of you in person, which I hope to do here someday, just a little bit of background. So, chief of the technical support branch here in Walla Walla, I'm in the district office, so I kind of end up being part of the focal point for much of what the operational, Ann works in my branch. I have the natural resource management part of the world, which is your environmental, fish, wildlife, recreation. I have the other part of my branch, which is the NAV, hydro, and flood. So I kind of get to touch all of those pieces, not only in how we complete those missions each day, technically, working with outside partners. So I'm in a unique place where
Earl Duggar, McNary Dam,
where I kind of get to see all
the conference
pieces and how they all fit together. Just a little bit more of a backdrop on me. Been working in the Corps for 20 years right here in the Northwest, both in Portland and Walla Walla. So I know and love these dams and all the missions that we have to complete. So with that, I will start into a little bit of, and first of all, I guess I want to start out by saying, you know, earlier this year when we ran into issues at Lower Granite, I want to first say thanks to all who worked together to try to, once the problem was identified with, wow, we've got some holdups, we got some water temperature issues, we have some unique situations this year. I was really thankful to see everybody get together.
Has joined the conference.
Biologically, we had people from construction with the roof contract going on. We had people from water management, people here from FPOM, BPA, and the Corps. You know, kind of got together and tried to figure out what's the best way to solve this problem right here today with the with all of the barriers that we have before us. And you know, some good stuff came out of that. Hurried up the roof contractor. Pulled units out of maintenance cycle early, got them back online, you know, worked with folks to modify the spill patterns and hold a little water, inject it in at the right times when the fish were running. And I guess I just want to say thanks up front for being flexible and helping us navigate through that. And I think it came out for the best for all. At least that's the way I see it. You can maybe tell me if that is the way you see it as well later. Any questions on that? And I'm going to go into BLH units and kind of the overall background of BLH units.
Well, no, we knew we were getting both.
No, I didn't know. Can you still hear me okay, Ann?
Yes, we can. There's someone else that didn't have their mute button on that was talking. And as folks join the call, that's what the interruption is. But I think we hear you fine. Thanks. I would say go ahead and maybe start with your history of BLH so people can understand, you know, the progression into this rehab, as well as moving through the bridge crane issue that also affects timeline.
Okay. So, and I apologize if people already know some of this background. I'll try to go through it quickly. When I refer to BLH units, BLH is the abbreviation for Baldwin Lehman Hamilton units. Now you know why we call them BLHs. That's a mouthful. This was one of the leading manufacturers of turbine back in 1970s. Those units that we have at Granite, we have them at Granite, Goose, and Lomo on units 1 through 3, and we also have 16 of them at John Day, which is in the district down river, but you know, still think of them as a sister organization. So these units, actually we have several others of this manufacturer, but of this style that they manufactured in the 1970s, we have since found, after you operate these things for 30 to 40 years, there is an inherent problem in the way they designed one of the linkages down inside the bowels of the unit. And what happens, and I'll try not to get too technically detailed here, but what happens is after time, these things experience a fatigue failure. It has to do with very hard materials. Fatigue failures are one of those things that they go over time, they operate fine, everything looks good, and all of a sudden one day they snap. That is the difference between kind of that fatigue failure and what you oftentimes think of as something that, you know, just kind of slowly stretches and grunts a little and kind of hangs on and just gets kind of oblong. You know, that would be preferred in this situation, but it's not. We have the, it runs along fine, all of a sudden it's a very hard material, all of a sudden it's had enough and it snaps. And that's the reason why we're beginning to see that on Unit 1s, like Lomo Unit 1 and Granite Unit 1, is because years ago we kind of shifted to driving those units hard, using them as priority units. You know, they're first on, last off, which means they're getting more use than some of the others, so that's the reason why we're seeing this problem evident in them before we are in Units 2s, 3s, and on. So that's just a little background on a brittle fracture. It happens quickly, not slowly. The problem is when that fracture happens, this is the linkage
that holds
one of the blades in position. I mean, it could happen on multiple blades. That would be really bad. But it holds the blade in position. You know, they all flex together. They all rotate together as the unit goes through its loading cycle. And when this linkage breaks, one of the blades breaks free and starts to spin. Unfortunately, when it does that, it usually goes to the flat position. And at full speed of unit, the blade starts dragging on the wall, which brings the unit to a screeching halt if it starts going through shutdown quickly. If not, it keeps driving the unit while it's scraping on the wall at full speed. Not good. That's the reason why we have initiated a program to drop the cones on these things, try to inspect them early, and see if we are getting any indication of cracking or anything like that. Which is what we did at Granite. We actually dropped the cone on it, found that there was just some hairline fractures that were starting. You know, we caught them probably the year before they probably would have failed. And so we initiated blocking the blades in place, which kind of leads me as a segue into how did we know what to do with it when it failed? Well, when things like Lomo started failing and we started seeing this problem crop up other places, we initiated an engineering study with the Hydroelectric Design Center, our Center of Expertise in the Corps of Engineers for turbines, and said, okay, what do we do about these? And it's kind of a complicated issue. We had to address not only technically what do you do with them, but operationally. I mean, can we leave these things dead for a year while we
wait around to fix them? No, probably not. Where do we put them? How do we fix them? How often should we inspect them? All those sorts of things were what this engineering study addressed. For all of those reasons, I won't go into all of them. I'll hit on a few of them. The study recommends that in most cases, especially unit ones, and the priority units, you know, like one through three, that the ultimate goal, the long-term goal, is to return them to full Kaplan. Understanding that you had to have a short-term fix in between, it recommends that if you have a failure or if you have a pending failure, you block the blade, and then you initiate repair to full Kaplan. Some of the units way on the other end of the powerhouse. The report does recommend, in some cases, block them and leave them that way. Although, interestingly enough, times have changed. Even some of those other units may not be in that situation these days. But it did consider things like what's the best place to block these blades for fish passage, both juvenile and adult. One of the things is if we don't have it blocked at the maximum 1% range, we could find ourselves during high flow times of the years having too much spill going over the spillway and not enough going through units, and then we have a TDG gassing problem of the river. It looked at things like we've got to put this thing back in service and at least block the blades so that we can run them the rest of the year for attraction near the fish ladders. So, you know, it considered things like that. I think it even did look into things like, you know, you can't always make everything perfect, so on really low flow years, yeah, we could have issues where we don't have enough water to run that unit. And then, like, you know, I started this discussion with, you know, you have the choice of you shut down unit one and run unit two, or you do what I would call a really creative solution that we did this year, and that was hold up a little water and be able to inject it through unit one. So the study in itself was this general study that went over the entire region because, like I said, we got these in John Day as well. So it did try to address all of those issues. So real quick before I open it for questions on kind of the background, blocking the blades, just a little definition on that. Blocking the blades actually means you take, you unwater the unit, you physically weld blocks in place to physically hold the huge blades in place with something substantial enough that it can actually restrain the forces of the water running through that unit and a unit running at full capacity in the upper 1% range. So it's not a couple tack welds, it's actually a fairly involved weld some blocks in place, certified welders, dewater it, you know, prep the blades for weld prep, eat them, all those sorts of things so you don't damage them when you weld them, because ultimately you're going to have to take these blocks back off. You know, this takes a month or better of time, full crew of labor, you know, $350,000+, and it's kind of a necessary evil to get that unit back to a functional state, assuming that you're going to be out of service for a year or so. So before I go into the specifics on granite and cranes and low mo, any questions on the backdrop of BLHs and how we get there?
I think we're probably pretty good. I don't see anybody asking. We have the bulk of these folks have listened to some TSP discussions in Fitterwig and or SRWG, and I think that was a good background. The only element I didn't hear was that in the case of both Lomo and Lower Granite, when an angle had to be chosen, that the TSP group is the one that made the recommendation. And I believe that, I know for Unit 1 at Granite, that was brought to FPOM because that's why we went back and had to change to the upper 1% based on the information that Martin Ahman brought forward at that time. So that's kind of an important element for these folks here, you know, in fisheries.
I guess one thing that I was involved in TSP and all this stuff and all the background. It's Gary Fredericks, No Fisheries. One thing that we were puzzling over was what was specifically went into the 29-degree blade angle choice. If you go through the Kaplan Repair Strategy paper, there's really no information that specifically identifies the rationale for that 29-degree And I'm not sure if that's what Granite has now or not, but that's what the strategy actually recommended at the time.
Yes, Granite has 29. And let's put it this way. It kind of falls in the category of it's already well understood that the 1% range is the target that we are shooting for, that, you know, the buy-off mandates during certain parts of the year. So obviously, I guess let's go through it this way. Obviously, you can't put it somewhere outside the 1% range. That would not be cool for part of the year. So you kind of put it in the 1% range, which means you can't go any farther up during kind of the outside fish window periods either. So it's kind of a happy medium. And
well, yeah,
one thing I've learned.
I was just wondering what the rationale was, because we've done a lot of work on open geometry operation and blade on fish passage through units, and so I didn't know if any of that information had been used. I'm not even sure who actually chose that, if it was Martin or Bob Davidson,
yes,
those guys who went through that, because I remember back when this first came up, which was, 2008, 2009, somewhere in there, and asking the question of how that was arrived at then, too, and not really getting much of an answer on that.
I'll tell you what I learned. And actually, I did. I learned something about this the other day. Because I asked a very similar question, technically. I remember that's kind of where my brain goes sometimes. So how come we just didn't put it at the top peak, right in the middle? You know, if we were going to pick a point, why didn't we just pick the middle? I asked that of Martin.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you guys all know Martin. And he says, well, Dwayne, actually, based on, Gary, what you were just talking about, some of that geometry study and things like that, some of the stuff we're looking at on ice harbors and some of the stuff we've learned, he says, you know, actually, if you want to just perfectly maximize the upper side of the 1% range, geometrically, is good.
Right.
It's better.
Right.
And so he says, so we put it right up there. We pulled back from the upper edge slightly because you do have fluctuations in forebay and tail race elevations, which can drive you up and down on that curve a little bit, very minute amount. But he says, so we pulled back slightly from that 1% range, that upper 1% mark, and determined that was the best place to put it for all parties involved.
Okay.
And you're right, I didn't read that in the report, but
and that's really my concern.
Pleased to know that was considered.
Because I understand all of that. I don't know that everybody else does. I've spent a lot more time working on turbines than other folks have, so it would have been nice to have that explained specifically.
That's kind of considering just juvenile passage. That makes a lot of sense. But the issue with Granite is that you can't operate your flop spill level when you have your turbine unit 1 set that high. So you'd have to switch to turbine unit 2, which is bad for adult passage, or run turbine unit 1 higher than you should, and then take away from spill. So there's another issue.
Although your only other option for a 1% range is the lower end of the 1% range, which is really maybe 6,000 CFS less.
Well, this time we're
you're still way up there.
But I think what people are saying is on most units, where you put it is probably okay. There's going to be certain units, like say unit ones that are critical for adult passage. We're going to want to take a good hard look on the criteria for that, because those ones you really have to take a look at, like adult passage during low flow conditions, because this year we got kind of stunned because you guys were at 17. If we were at 14, we probably could have weaseled it through and been able to keep unit one running the whole time. So I think what people are looking at right now is if we have to keep welding these units, and there's certain critical units such as ones that are primary for adult passage, we're going to want to take a good hard look and not just have one size fits all.
The issue here, Tom, you know, I think the higher you go, staying within the 1%, is better for adult passage through the unit. And that's what people were looking at, was fish passage through the unit. What you're talking about is fish passage through the powerhouse,
and
through the dam.
I'm going to get a lot more fish going to the ladder than I am to the unit.
Right,
so.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that that's a different way of looking at it, and it wasn't looked at that way, and it should be.
And I think that was my point.
It was.
I hope so.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying that there are a couple of different... All I'm saying is that there was another approach. Man, you are just...
It's my job. It's supposed to be crummy. Have you seen the letters we've had to send on Lower Granite? Do you know how much beatings I've taken over Lower Granite this year?
But wait a minute. Well, you know, you're the first. I have
some
to say
spent
that
a lot of time on working on turbines, too.
Yeah,
I know. Years.
And when this issue first broke, if I don't recall correctly, it was Oregon and Critfick that were concerned about the fall Chinook that were in the river and that we have adequate protection through spill or the units. And that was something that was considered when we were trying to run Unit 1, and they didn't want to give on that because they were concerned about juvenile survival. So
right, yeah, if Unit 1 was fixed at a lower queue, they might.
We would have had to make that. We would have had to make that decision. So all we're saying is,
yeah,
let's not have
a different decision.
I think all we're saying is, let's not use this 29 degree angle as a one size fits all. I think if we do in the future have to make some of these decisions, let's take a look at the full range of that operation, what that unit is supposed to be providing. Is it just juveniles? Is it just adult passage? Or does it also have critical from adult attraction standpoints? At that point, then we need to take a harder look at this.
And that's where I was going to, Tom, was the process that arrived at that angle seemed narrow, and it was something that I wasn't directly involved in. It was something that came out of the strategy from HTC, and I think we're saying the same thing, is that we need to broaden the horizon a bit in the process that looks at this.
Yeah.
And I brought up the BLH issue. It's on the agenda for John Day as well, because I'm concerned about that.
Right, and we've heard your concerns, and so what we've done is, the good news part is still coming up. We have been able to move the schedules up. There is hope that we're going to get it within the next couple of years. So
let him go there. And I think what I'm also hearing is when Unit 1 breaks at another facility, before a decision is just made and brought to FPOM, depending on the number of ladders they have, the time of year that it's going to be out, and things like that, why don't we try to have some upfront coordination so that we're not having discussions after the fact with people being dissatisfied. So I definitely hear that message, and we can take that forward.
Yeah. I guess I'll even jump in here, and I apologize. I'm not real familiar with all of the surrounding issues. So, but I will say at the end of the day, I will echo what we just said there. It is, you know, we're here, I'm here, to try to help consider everything that needs to be considered, balance all of those things, because at the end of the day, you know, my goal in life here is the public steward who is trying to consider all of those different features, because you heard the broad spectrum that I get to look at. I'm trying to balance all those things, and I do want to hear the input, and I think I've even heard, hey, maybe we need to look at those and consider them. I guess I will say this, and I hope not to irritate anybody by this, but just kind of like the issue that we worked through, and I was complimenting for the teamwork that worked through that earlier this year, at the end of the day, it's not going to be ideal for anybody. And, you know, what's good one time of the year is bad another time of the year, which is bad for this group and that. I mean, at the end of the day, I guess I'll say I'm trying, and I believe the Corps is trying to do their best to kind of work all of those things, and gladly take your input. It's the reason why I got people like Ann sitting there with you today, is gladly take your input. Got it. We'll see. But I will say this. I'm hoping we're moving forward, and I hope if we can fix these units, because, you know, in my technical heart, my goal is to fix all these units, get rid of this problem we have, and get back to full Kaplan operation, so that this becomes a moot point that we even have to discuss where we have to block this thing before it busts on us. So I'll use that as a segue to move forward into, here's what we're doing on Unit 1 at Granite, Mo, and how the cranes play in. So...
Dwayne, sorry to interrupt. It's Russ Kiefer with Auto Fishing Game, and I appreciate you, Dwayne. We've had these rough spots and these general issues in the past, and it's one where, you know, you guys are the experts on the turbines and operate them. You have a set group working on this turbine survival program. But we've had a couple of issues up and down the system where their focus, understandably, is the turbine environment. And we're, you know, primarily fish biologists and don't understand a lot of those technical issues that go in. But it's one where, once again, it seems the Corps has made decisions on the turbine environment and fish going through the turbine, whereas fish managers, our goal is to try to keep fish out of the turbine environment. And then number two, and so we have a difference there, is that it seems that the Corps is focusing on trying to make the turbine environment best for fish going through it, where we're trying to work to keep fish out of the turbines, and sometimes the best environment for fish going through the turbine pulls more fish through the turbines, and that's counterproductive for adult returns. And the other one is the Corps' focus on, and you mentioned it about the Lower Granite, welding the blades as part of the decision, was concern about PDG with uncontrolled spill over being able to operate the priority turbine for adult passage under more conditions. And so it's one is that our review of the data, you know, doesn't indicate that just amongst itself the uncontrolled spill is more of an impact on our group goal of recovery as not being able to operate these priority turbines and creating more pressure in the collection systems. You know, Bonneville, McNary, McMod was classic examples where we went in and tried to improve the turbine environment, but we made conditions overall worse for fish with pressure. So on this one, yes, it may have come to FPOM, and one, I can't participate all the time in FPOM, and two, you know, it's very complex, and you get the turbine survival program discussion, but it should be incumbent upon the Corps to make sure and at least explain these things as all the potential fish impacts to NOAA fisheries before these type of decisions are made. Because if it had been explained to me that when we're welding turbine one, we're going to be trading off being able to run the turbines, more water through it, so we have less uncontrolled spill, versus not being able to run the priority turbine for adult passage at low flow conditions, I'd have said, no, we want to run that turbine in low flow conditions because we need it for adult attraction. I never got that explained to me clearly, and that's why we get in these conflicts, is that, yes, it's brought to us that is a complex geometric discussion, but it's not explained to us, and it doesn't appear you've gone through NOAA fisheries and figured out the potential impacts on fish and our collective goal of recovery. And I think that's our frustration, is that we've missed that several times with this turbine survival program, and that we're not looking at the whole picture on how it affects operations under varied conditions and affects our collective goal of recovering these fish.
Okay, thanks, Russ. One of the things that Dwayne might be willing to do at a later meeting is come in and give a little bit more detailed presentation on the various aspects of selection of blade angles and just go into kind of the standard TSP. But I think for now...
You know, that is a TSP issue, and folks are welcome to come to TSP and work on that issue there.
Right.
So we don't have to take up 2 hours of O&M meeting time to talk about one issue.
Yeah.
That is, there is a venue for this, and it is open.
Yeah, and we continue to hear from Russ. This is the second year I've only been on, you know, FPOM for 2.5 years now, and I remember a year ago, Russ, when we first did Lower Granite, you came back and didn't understand. We had you call and talk with Marvin Shutters and Martin, and yet I still hear confusion on your end in terms of your overall understanding.
So let me see if I can pull this back to Unit 1 at Lower Monumental. And I appreciate the thoughts that were placed there on the table. I will say this, and once again, apologize, I don't want to offend anybody. I realize, and don't worry, I'm aware of the complicated world and all of those things that were just discussed. Let's not mistake that Lower Granite Unit 1, we are talking about a temporary stopgap measure for as little time as possible to buy us a little bit of time so that we can get it returned to full Kaplan so that it completes its intended mission and function. Let's not poke too hard at the symptoms of the problem, which is that we got to block this blade for temporary. Realize we're going to block it someplace. We got to block it someplace. It's probably not going to be ideal for everybody. I kind of tried to relate that before. It's going to probably be bad for everybody and every species and every organization involved with this for part of the year. As a steward, I've got to try to do the thing that's going to probably equally irritate everybody. But we gotta make a decision to fix it somewhere, because if not, Granite Unit 1 would probably still not be fixed in place. It would still be dead in the hole.
Wait,
so let's not.
Let's just move to the time frame. We've heard Russ.
Reweld blades schedule.
Let's just work on the time frame here. We've got some people and time limitations. So if you could just work through the time frames for those units, that will be appropriate for this meeting, and then the technical concerns can be taken to some other forums.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Yep.
So let's talk about Unit 1 with the premise of this is a stopgap temporary measure. The original plan on the units, the BLHs, up and down the river for Walla Walla was 1 a year. That was kind of a programmatic thing. Hey, we got to get after these things. We know Unit 1s are going to start to fail. We started inspecting them. We think we can probably rebuild one of these a year. I came back to this position. I've been here for now 2 years. We jump-started LOMO Unit 1. By the way, at that time, we didn't know that Granite had a problem. We jump-started LOMO Unit 1 again. Said, hey, let's get that one rebuilding full Kaplan. We also then here just recently injected the winding on Unit 1 as well so that we can rebuild all the way from generator, or all the way from turbine all the way to generator, and avoid another future outage of this really crucial Unit 1. So that one's on schedule, moving down the path. Just a side note there, some people thought that, oh, well, we'll have to stop Unit 1 because we're only going to do one a year, right? We're going to have to stop Unit 1. That is not the case. It's already in the chute. It's moving. It's working. Don't want to slow it down. Let it continue on down its path. You know, it's working for a potential contract award here mid to late 14, and a work window in probably the 15 time frame. So, you know, we then drop the cone on Granite Unit 1, doing that preemptive inspection that we looked at. We found the cracked linkage, luckily caught it before it failed, blocked those blades in place. We have, as you, some of you well know, we have the crane work going on. We already had the crane work in the chute. We got bad cranes at LOMO and Goose. They have similar problems. That contract, plans and specs, everything, that baby's moving on down the path. When this issue came up earlier this year, you know, I know some people said, well, why don't we swap those cranes around? I don't think there's a full understanding of the schedule of those cranes. In this year, or when those cranes are awarded, we will be pulling the main drums out of both Goose and Granite cranes, which is the main long lead item. So even though the final completion of Granite is not until the in the 14 time frame or the 15 time frame, the major parts of that, it's already started. They've already yanked them out, sent them off to the shop, started working on them, welding on them, and fixing the gears on them. So that way, when they do get on site, they're dropping that new part in place, doing the rest of the rehab, and off they go. So
this is Dave Statler. Sorry to interrupt here, and you may have already alluded to this, but what you identified the years that this would occur, or are identified in the years where this would occur. What is the work period to accomplish it once accomplish actual work?
I'm getting there. You mean for Granite Unit 1?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm getting there. Let's see. I've got a kind of a time frame here at the end of my notes. So let me get that.
Thank you.
So when this issue came up, we said, hey, we need to jump into action. We went to the prepped a capital work decision document, went to the capital work group here in October. By the way, actually after the deadline for when we were supposed to submit it, but they let us in the door anyways. Thank you, BPA. We came in with a decision document that said, hey, we need money to start plans and specs on and the design efforts and to buy the linkage spare parts, the actual linkage for Unit 1 at Granite. Right now, Portland District has a contract with they'd let, and we could grab a hold of that contract, get a set of that linkage. I mean, that's, you know, $800 to $1 million worth of parts buying right now to put in the unit when we take it down. So we jumped on that. We were approved for that decision document in October. Takes a little bit of time to get the money here, but that is in motion so that we can get started on that and get started on plans and specs. Now I'll go through the time frame. So in 13, we got that DSD, so, you know, because of this issue, we got the DSD going. The crane contracts are, they were out for bid already. They are advertised. They're going through the final processes before they award those contracts. In FY14, you know, those we'll buy those parts. We'll get them on site. We'll start doing the design. We'll develop plans and specs, contract documents, advertise, award the contract. On the crane side, we will be doing in 14. We'll be doing that contract will hopefully be awarded. Well, not hopefully, it will be awarded. The granite crane, pre-construction submittals, the removal of the main hoist drums will be done in 14. Goose will be removing the main hoist drums and actually completing some of that work. Both of them are kind of on the same time frame because those drums being sent off are really the long lead item on both of those. In 15, we will be working on the crane rebuild at Lower Granite. So they'll move to the site and they'll start that actual work, get that drum back, get it installed. And in the August to September time frame, we think we will be able to then start tearing down that unit. And I guess here's where I'll pause for a moment. You know, there is discussion. Usually August has been a good time frame, but this year, I don't know, you're the biologist. The fish came a little later than normal, so, you know, that potentially we could hold off a little bit on that August and September to see if we could continue operating.
Thank you, Dwayne. I think we have a lot of people that are antsy to keep moving as we push this in. If we could just big picture time frame for when we plan to initiate Unit 1 at Lower Granite, and when it, and the duration, and similarly the time frame when we'll initiate LOMO and the duration of that to when it'll be back in service. And then we'll get a little short that we can forward to Tammy and we'll put it in the minutes.
Okay, so yes, I was just elating that it about August, September of 15, we expect the unit to be out for about a year on Granite. And let me look back at my notes here. I think LOMO will probably be on-site work will be in 2015 as well.
So I think the only other part of the discussion we want to kick out, Dwayne, was whether or not that would fit. That's something that, as you've worked with the group to move this forward a year from a start in 16, you could back it up to when the bridge crane was going to be finished in July of 15, and you could potentially have a contractor start. I see some heads nodding a little bit, not liking the August-September time frame, and so knowing this is going to be out for a year, do people have some better suggestions for a time frame?
Is it a full year for the construction?
Yes.
At this point, that's the estimate, yeah, full year.
Be best, if you could tighten that up by a month or two and start at the end of September.
Well, we did have a discussion with the project manager early on, and they were very concerned that even if they come in and make a promise now, they're likely to go past it with all the process, and so a year is what we should work with.
I've never seen a turbine torn apart back together in less than a year.
Right.
The pushing and screaming and yelling that you do, it still doesn't go faster.
So something to consider is that it's really critical for us to have it available in August.
that we don't start it in 14 August. You wait till September. Then if it runs long the next year, you don't lose both of your August.
Right. That's
interesting. Yeah. So a preference would be to start in September is what folks are... Okay, so that's reasonable. Yeah. Why don't we take that...
I'll convey that back to the project manager that, just go ahead and lag a month there. That gives a little more time in case anything happens with the crane contract as well, so that's probably better for all.
Two weeks would be a big help there.
So if I'm looking at your schedule correctly, you're talking basically late 16 is when this unit one is you're projecting would be back on?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Yes,
that's correct. Hopefully September of 16, depending on when we start there, September of 16.
And when I say late, that's pretty much the end of the most of the fish run from a juvenile and adult standpoint. So we've pretty much that fish migration season has passed.
It sounds to me like if you start in September of 15, you will have it ready by hopefully mid-August of 16. That would be,
Do you want to bet on it?
Otherwise, you're getting into two. No, I don't want to bet on it. But I mean, if you're trying to do the best you can, that would be the best.
That's why I was thinking September 15.
Try to shave 2 weeks off of that. Then that late August period is the worst. Where you have spill and the lowest flows of the year.
Yeah, so I think you start September 15th and you pray to God you get it back.
Or even August. September 1st. August. Because that's when spill stops and then you have enough flow at the powerhouse to...
Yeah.
And then when's the performance test at Granite?
I will say this. You probably have learned from me so far. I will push it as far as we can. But we'll plan on a year, and we'll push the team as far as we can to squeeze as much as possible out of it.
Okay,
that sounds good. I guess the only follow-up question we'll have is, yes, Bern, I know, I'm making your birthday that extra special. So looking at that, if I'm doing the math right, and I'm probably not, that's 3 or 4 years out before we're going to have Unit 1 back and done. And the question is going to be is, is the region willing to roll the dice for 4 years and pray to God we don't have another low-flow hot summer.
Yeah.
that's a discussion I think people are going to have to take
in-house.
Your
choice?
Or weld the blades.
Then the question is, then you weld the blades.
There's
up
a re-weld comment here on the agenda.
Who would have done that?
Needs to be addressed. So
let's put it this way. We're almost into 14, and we're talking about starting in 15. So I'm not seeing 4 years, but you're right. I might be doing the math differently.
Well, I'm saying, so you got next year, and you got all 15, and you're going to have most of 16. So you're 3-ish years. So, and that's just I'm just throwing that out there. Is people are going to go back, talk to the policy types, and say, yes, we're willing to roll the dice that we're not going to have a low flow hot year and have more adult blockages, or we're just going to let it ride and hope to God we don't, and then we'll get the fix done in 3 years.
Yeah,
so it's going to be people are going to have to make that decision.
Is there another alternative?
We're going to have to look at all that's going on out there. We don't anticipate having another roof repair. I know that doesn't solve the sockeye issue, but recall that we also have phase one of the JFF that we're expecting to come online. When phase one of the JFF comes online, we'll have cold water for the trap. Until that happens, we won't have enough cold water to run the trap. We're all familiar now with the auxiliary water pumps, so we can turn those on more readily than we could this year, where we fumbled around to see how that works. And, water management is something that's going to have to talk to the potential frequency of a warm water year like this. This is not as severe as a 2001, and I know that we've been gradually moving towards warmer years. I'm told that in 2012 we had 2 weeks that we couldn't operate the adult trap, and so this was more severe. As to whether we're on, whether it's projected that we're going that route, I guess we were talking on the way down here. You guys play in the water management forums more than I do. Early forecast was that this was going to be a wet, cool winter. I haven't had anybody tell me differently. And so that doesn't say that 2014 is going to be anything like 2013. I think we have to have all the cards on the table, because as we work through this agenda, we have another issue that's going to come up and start affecting some of the way we operate our facility in 2015. And so I just wanted to tee up all the things that are out there. We're going to have some more discussions.
Honestly, if it was just next year, I would say roll the dice. I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
But I got two more summers I'm going to have to go through. And if we have big fall Chinook run and big sockeye run and we block those up again, you don't think you're going to have the region scream at you going, why did you do something?
So
I'm just giving you guys the heads up. You're probably going to get a letter from us saying, you might want to think about doing something before.
Stepping on the outside here, but has there been an effort to develop an alternate path
on this alternative path to looking at a re-well, looking at the pros and cons, how you would operate the project under those conditions in August. Has there been an effort to do that and to lay out a plan that, you know, not choosing it, but just lay it out so that you see what it looks like?
Well, I think Dwayne kind of hit on the elements of that. So that question was taken back after this was received from Tom, and that's why, you know, Dwayne was a little bit on the phone talking. You know, essentially what you didn't describe is just some of the details of other maintenance on other elements of the facility that you start to jeopardize when you're going to take off a unit now for a month in some given time and you're going to spend X amount of dollars on that. That means something else isn't going to be done and you're potentially then starting to affect reliability at another place in a facility that's hurting.
Understand, that's the power side, that's the core side. Also, there's the fish side, though, and being able to develop a better operation with a rewelded blade. And I haven't heard anybody, I'm not sure how, that sounds a little bit complex to me in terms of how you run that powerhouse and what the benefits might be to offset that risk.
Let's put it this way, despite what people may think, when I look at the powerhouse and I look at the unit, or the entire facility that's out there, we operate the entire thing for all the mission functions. So, yeah, this is a little bit of, and it's a little bit complex. Yeah, you take people and everything and effort and you put it one place and something else is going to fall through the crack. And I'm not going to say it's just the power side. These same maintenance workers are the same people that work on fish ladders, work on nav locks, work on powerhouses, work on spillway gates. So they don't have a uno-purpose. They have a multi-purpose function in everything they do. So it really does affect the entire facility when we do things. You know, I described what it takes to weld blades and block them. Everybody knows that we know how to do it and we can do it, and we all know what it takes to do it. So I guess I'll leave that for you folks to help us understand which direction. Do we want to knock something off of kilter, such as the blade well or the blade return to full Kaplan, or you're right, you guys were talking about, do you disgamble it and let it ride? So I will leave that to you. And
I think
I don't know, Anne. You can tell me when you're done with me, and I'll exit.
All right. Maybe just listen. We have one comment from NOAA Fisheries on that topic, Dwayne.
Erdig is just finishing a brand new $1 million lower granite tail race mod that we've never had before. And I expect we're going to be able to go down there and come up with some different spill pattern under low flows, that how that even if you can't operate unit one, you operate unit two, how we can improve entrance conditions to the ladder on the powerhouse side. I'm hopeful about that. But we got to use that tool, and it's right now they're in the calibration process, and that's going to be really important for the next 2 years while we're waiting to get full Kaplan status back from unit one. Yeah, that gives us a lot more flexibility.
Okay.
But in the short term, we have that model as being completed, as we're said.
Okay, thanks. And Tom has one more comment, and then...
It's just a question.
Okay.
I'm just saying, does the welding, is that any way impacted by your crane repair work?
No, we can dewater the unit.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to put in bulkheads and tail logs, unwire the unit, put in a scaffolding, prep it all again, re-weld. Well, you got to cut them all off, re-weld them. So it takes slightly more to re-weld than it does to do it originally.
Okay, we got one more comment.
My final last comment is, let's have, this has gone on with a lot of people that are very passionate about it. I think that it deserves its own little meeting off to the side where folks can come up with an alternative plan. You have the plan to return back to Kaplan. How about developing the pros and cons of a plan to re-weld and just see what it looks like? Get all the pieces out there. What will it push off? What do you have to do with crane rehab? And what do you have? What's the benefits for salmon? You know, what about looking at different ways to set up theories with and without a different re-weld?
I want to interject this. Well, I want to frame that this way. I think everybody would agree, and maybe I'll let you guys talk about it. I think everybody would agree, primary target is returning this unit to full Kaplan. I think we all agree on that. What you're talking about there, and I understand it and I hear it, is developing an alternative on the temporary fix side.
Right.
I want to frame it and make sure we keep those two separate. And
I agree.
I got the temporary thing, but I think we all agree that we should drive forward on getting that baby back into full Kaplan and return it to its mission, function, and purpose.
Absolutely. I was just talking about that interim time. It could be 3 years or so, more maybe. And that folks are seeing a lot of risk there, and there have been some desire expressed to look at alternatives.
So I guess the only thing I'm going to try to cap this with is, isn't this an appropriate adaptive management issue? So a lot of you are tracking water management through the year. If you see us going into conditions that would suggest that we need a fix, isn't that an appropriate time for us to go through this whole process of alternative development rather than, oh my God, you know, there's a train that could run off the track down there, and we don't know if it will or not, but let's be prepared. Well, that's going to take a lot of resources, and if we know that we're getting close, then yeah, it's worth putting those resources on it. But again, you know, I mean, we have to start bringing in engineering folks, et cetera, to put this off, put something like this together, and when we do that, some of our other projects are going to slip, you know, and my preference is that I'm fine with putting together an alternative group if we really see that on our sights in the horizon for a given water year suggests that we need to be considering this for adaptive management, but I'm not sure we're there yet for 2014. And if and when we start getting there for 2015,
you're
okay.
Absolutely right, but the thing is, if we wait to that long, then you can't get your work done. If you're going to wait till like 15, like, oh my God, it's going to be a low flow year, it's too late. You can't do anything. And then we're going to have to basically come and hope to God to modify project ops, keep our fingers crossed that we're smarter than the fish, and then we can make things work. And
so far, the record is not awesome. Indicating you might be able to come up with something in terms of just operation without one. You might not. So you need to work through that.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm saying is just keep...
And I would like to add that I'm not certain that... taking the thing out of the server for so long to return it to Kaplan is better for fish than just rewelding it at the lower end of the 1% range so that we can use it full time. So make that clear that not everyone thinks right off the bat that spending a total year out of service to get it back to Kaplan is best for fish. That it may be better to re-weld it at a better spot for fish than it currently was welded without.
Hey, put us on subgroup.
All right. Sounds like we need to have some technical discussion on the side on this so we can move on here today. Thank you, Russ, for your comment. So let me thank you, Dwayne, for joining us. You can hang up and appreciate your time.
Thank you all for listening.
And this is Carter. I got to step out for about a half hour for a pretty critical meeting, but I'll be back a little later.
Wayne Weston, Walla Walla District.
Has left the conference.
Okay.
Carl Duggar, McNary Dam.
Back to my states.
Has left the conference.
All right, so let's regroup and get back into Portland's updates. I'm going to have a couple, and then we're going to jump to listen to Derek and Bob talk about 15 Mile Creek Steelhead, and then we'll go back and zip through this all in a fast manner.
Right.
Until we get to Walla Walla's issues, and then hey, this is all good stuff. I mean, I learned something. I didn't know what a Belden Lehman Hamilton unit was.
It's called BLA.
So we're going to be talking about that with John Day. So let's go to the LED testing at Bonneville Dam. Ben Hausman, what do you got?
There's, I think it's an attachment or two.
Okay.
Several attachments.
Tammy just,
and we just kind of want input on whether we should move in that direction. Basically, the light we have is appropriate for there. It's about three times as bright as the current halogens for the lux meter. But, you know, it's not
like
cheap.
A laser.
Yeah, a little short, but they, unfortunately, they're really burly lights, so they have, you know, like a multiple pound light Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you got.
That's why that cost is what it is. So we've got to go back.
How much does it cost to have 3 men change a few light bulbs? $12,700.
Yeah. So they have to change the housing because they literally won't support those.
So those new lamp holders and all that is necessary.
Right. So it went from being like a $3,000 or $4,000 thing to about a $17,000 thing.
Yeah. Yep. We have actually placed the bulbs.
Do what?
Will you ever have to clean or replace the bulbs? Then it might be worth it.
Well, they're like, well, I mean, I don't know about cleaning.
The bulbs themselves are guaranteed for 5 years.
5 year guarantee on the bulb, yeah.
But expected to be significantly longer. That's the guarantee portion. But
you're only buying 3 extras, so I better be.
That's
going
to be funny.
How long is the manufacturing business?
Yeah, a while for this one.
Yeah, lighting science.
But they're, you know, it's going to be. Test to see whether or not it changes those lenses. You know, they're cool, obviously they don't get hot, so I don't think they'll cook on and have the mineral deposit issue is bad, but I don't know. What we're going to do is we have a couple in hand now that we can put in and see how they do in that regard in the meantime, but we're just curious if folks thought it was still worthwhile moving forward for the cost.
Yeah, the picture is interesting, and the I know these are 5,000 or 550 or whatever degree of lights, but the color is off. I've noticed that the halogen is actually the lighter of the three of them. And
that actually, I think that picture is kind of deceptive. That's the LED, and it's
well, you know, this is LED only, and they're all the same yellow. This is halogen only, and they're the white. This is white, yellow.
Yeah, this is just, you know, that's just one bulb though. So this on the wall is LED.
I see.
So why don't we just put those that we have to test them and see how they function?
Is this similar to what John said?
As far as baking and mineral deposits and dirt.
Yeah, the heat is
here. Before we go ahead and throw a bunch in, let's see what they do.
Just put the ones in and see if we wait a year or something?
Yeah. Okay. Monitor it. Before we go ahead,
about 15,000. I'm sure we can beef it up just to put this couple in.
12,000 just to put the bulbs in.
And then the price might go down by then.
Yeah, I mean, we can put them in. We can put them in. If you've seen those, they're like bulbs, current house themselves make them flop over. So those things are going to never stay in place.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they get pretty floppy.
Probably tripod on the bottom.
So you guys have the money to do the whole.
We do.
The whole thing?
Yeah, we could.
And have you tested them? I didn't see anything about heat in here as far as the heat on the bulb itself. I know the halogens are hot.
Lick it. If you can lick it, it's fine.
I don't have.
Well, have you seen the bulb? It's kind of hard
to lick the lens.
Yeah, I guess.
Miley Cyrus.
Too much oil in the lens. It's great.
Okay, not comparable to the house.
Let's make a decision here. Let's make a decision. Put them in.
Put in the test ones?
Put them in.
I have no problem putting test ins.
Tests. Put them in.
No problem with putting the test ones in.
Okay.
You got a preference where?
I have no preference.
You?
Nice. I would say 18 sounds close to where you're working.
18 is fine. So the John Day BLH turbine hub upgrade kit.
Hey, can we get back on?
No. We know about the hub upgrade kit. Apparently, it came across your radar. You're like, hey, what's the update?
Yeah, I was digging into the BLH unit issue, and I found on the web a solicitation for repair parts equipment to do John Day. And I thought, oh, what's this? So, just looking for an update on that. Where are we at with that? I hadn't realized we'd already gone out for equipment, and then there's going to be a repair schedule. I would assume. And are we doing all 16 units? And where is this all leading? What's the schedule?
We get an answer?
No, I don't know anything.
It's on the web.
Next, the next meeting, then I'll find out.
There's only one set of spare parts, and so they're going out to get more spares.
this looked like it was broader than that.
To get the parts that...
For BLA, for repair.
Yeah.
For new linkages.
Is it just for the linkages, the parts?
Yeah.
Those are the million
dollar
parts.
That's what it looks like.
Right. And so they're trying to get them in place because they know they're going to have to get them.
Right.
So they're moving forward with getting them while they have the money in the contract.
So that implies a schedule, and it implies are we just going to put these in the back?
They're sitting in the back.
Critical spare part.
We know we're going to use
it's a critical spare part.
The question is, are you guys thinking about starting to do that?
Can't answer that.
Priority.
So that's another question. Are you guys doing like they're doing in the snake, where you're dropping a cone and doing inspections, look for hairline fracture and stuff?
They are.
We will need to give you an update because we don't have that information right now.
Okay. Caught you by surprise.
No. We sent it to a different person because we thought Miro was on vacation.
Okay. Yeah, let's find out what we're doing and if there's a schedule, and if there's not, maybe there should be.
We will get that information. With that, let's move on.
Our special subcommittee meeting to talk about surveys.
I will. Research updates. Mr. Rearsich, what do you got for me?
Well, we have nothing for ops coordination yet. However, we're talking about FGE, and by the end of this month, we're hoping to have something more definitive. So by next time, we'll talk about some spring work. And then the AFF is a little bit later in the agenda.
Okay. Well, then let's get our RCC update. I always love this part.
Yeah.
Where I can just take a breath and relax.
If I could just sum it up
in table.
One word would be mayhem.
Oh!
I know this meeting is a little mayhem.
I was talking about the ladder, by the way. He asked me, so what was the conditions like in the ladder?
Complete mayhem.
Yeah.
Mayhem.
Do you read my lips?
Somebody had to bring it up.
That was yours.
We should have had it up here.
Tammy did it in an interpretive dance.
He took the link off the website.
He is gone.
Yeah.
They took it off, though. It's not on the
what?
Sorry.
It's not there anymore.
You just get too many
hours. They're going to have advertisements.
No. Make some money.
All right. RCC update.
Lower Granite, yesterday's average 20. KCFS, 5 days out. Full study at 19. 10 days at 30.
30?
Yep.
2019-30.
McNary, yesterday, 108. 5-day forecast, 100. 10-day forecast, 122. Bonneville, yesterday, 122. 5-day forecast, 118. 10 days up to 135.
135.
And that is all.
All righty. Lamprey, what do you got? Lamprey update.
Lamprey run is done. Read the report.
When did you get the final counts?
Yeah.
The counts, I can talk about that. So the final counts of Lamprey are probably going to be delayed this year. So what's currently out there and that has been vetted are the daytime window counts and the nighttime window counts.
So is this Nathan speaking?
Yes, yes. Nathan.
Thank you.
We typically adjust those by adding in LPS counts. And as we were doing our monitoring of the LPS systems this year to verify the mechanical counts were working, we discovered they weren't working as expected. So we have to go back and adjust those counts. So that's going to be a process that will take place with kind of between us and NOAA, trying to determine how we can best adjust for what happened with the information.
Great.
Okay.
How about Avian?
Buddy?
Avian updates?
No, I think just remind people that on the 20th, we got the subcommittee meeting next week at John Day.
Subcommittee meeting on the 20th at John Day. Arabian. What's critical infrastructure?
It's a continual update because we've been asked to compile the list of critical infrastructure.
Yeah, there is a critical infrastructure list on the website.
There is.
Yeah. Should be.
We are supposed to standardize across units.
Yeah,
this is coming back to you.
One of those things that no progress was made on, it was kind of talked about spare parts, and I think as we're going around, we're seeing that what I've heard just recently is that about, I would guess it was 10 years ago was the last time when Dave Gerson was still here, there was apparently a chunk of money that went out to the projects to establish critical spare parts, And so the facilities, for the most part, have tried to maintain that, but we got kind of, it wasn't linked into the FEM program in some places, and you'll recall that we asked someone to work on it that didn't make any progress in Walla Walla. And so perhaps over the winter, we can see if we can find somebody else that might have some time to pick that back up.
And fine. Any BPA updates, Scott?
There's one that we're going to have more information in January on, but it's the replacing the lines at John Day. It's going to be the 2014-15 project. And Meryl's been following it closer than I have, but we're planning on wrapping up what the it is and bringing it to PAMA January.
Okay, thanks. All right, well, now we're going to jump to, I think Derek's been waiting long enough, you know, so now you know what F-bombs are like. You've got to go through, you've got to pay your dues before you can talk.
Well, what brought me to here was the fancy new Pit Tag reader that you got at the Dalles, but I'll back up a little bit. We've been monitoring 15 Mile Creek, which is downstream of the Dalles. It's a wild population of mid-Columbia DPS steelhead threatened. Also includes Chenoweth Creek, which is downstream, Mill Creek, 3 Mile Creek, and Mosier Creek. We've been putting about 2,000 to 3,000 pit tags and smolt out migrating from 15 Mile Creek since 2007. Started in 2006 with a smaller number. We started seeing, we put a pit tag array, an in-stream array, into 15 Mile Creek in 2010, and then beefed it up to 8 arrays in 2011-2012. And so what we saw fish coming over Bonneville, but we saw a huge loss going into 15 miles later. Turns out that these fish are mostly summer steelhead. They're not winter steelhead like we previously thought. But so they come over in, you know, July, August, and then spawn in the spring when the creek conditions allow. Problem is, in 2010, we saw 40% fewer fish going into the creek compared to going over Bonneville. 2011, we saw 50% less, and 2012, we saw 65% less. So, and then this year, it's a little bit better. I think we've got 60% or so survival. We've accounted for 35%, or all but 35% of the fish going into the creek so far. So we didn't know where those losses were, you know, it's a big pool. But looking at the Dalles counts, so far this year, of those tag smolt that we've tagged in 2010, 11, 12, we've got 33 going over Bonneville right now, and 27 of those have already gone over the Dalles. And so there's no route for them to get back to the creek. Except turbine routes.
So 27 of 33 pit tag fish seen at Bonneville have gone over the Dalles so far this year.
So far. We've detected a couple of them back in the creek, but the stream conditions really aren't good enough for fish to get in the creek right now. So.
And the sluiceway is closed December 15th to
March 1.
And we see something similar happening with John Day fish. You know, up to 50% of the fish can go up over McNary, and then they don't have a route back to John Day.
Is there a route back? It's not your preferred route.
Not a preferred
route. There's a turbine route.
Yeah.
Is there a change form in for that? Is there a change form in for the sluiceway operation? Because it currently says that will be looked at as an interim operation up to 13. So in order to make it permanent, or which I hope it is.
That's right, yeah, what was in the fish passage.
We need to change it. Yeah, so there needs to be a change to that particular, and I'd recommend we just change it to year round.
Done.
So while we're at it, anybody
you can try.
Opposed to that?
Yes.
Personally?
No. What's our credit we're going to get for this?
point two. Where's plugs to when I need him?
How about 0.2 SPU?
0.2
SPU.
That is what it boils down to.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well,
survival
they're not,
benefit unit.
Not winter run fish, they're actually summer run fish. Maybe I can somehow work them into a bee run situation here. And we can
turn up on
some
us.
To see a 20 to 30% bump in the run.
Well, you,
be expensive.
So you're losing somewhere 40% or more, somewhere between Bonneville and the creek.
Right.
And there are a lot of losses potentially there.
There are.
Have you got any handle on any of the other potential losses as harvest and?
We don't.
Is it Wertheimer hammering them somewhere along the way?
Yeah, the other loss is not known. There's just no pit tag program to,
right, not
to detect
at
it.
The boats, you know,
put one at the boat ramp in
like
Stevens
that.
And
be nice,
but the Wind
not.
River.
But these are all wild fish. They're not supposed to be.
Not supposed
cat.
To be keeping.
Except for.
What was the time you said they were going over Bonneville?
July, August.
When do you guys detect them on 15 Mile Creek? Typically,
our peak is late March.
Yeah. Late March.
They're responding.
Yeah.
So they're hanging sometimes out in the river, and then they're going up in the spring to spawn. And they're.
And we're seeing the same thing in Mill Creek.
Yeah.
The last couple of years we've pit tagged a few fish in Mill Creek.
No,
so far, 7 of about 12 have gone over the
dams. How about detections at odd places like Shears Falls or Midland Town?
Yeah, they go up into the chutes. I think we've got 8 out of the. Yeah, 8 out of the 33 fish have gone into the chutes.
Good place to hang out.
Oh.
But yeah, this is all new information with the pit tag reading.
So, what's the request here?
Well, I guess one thing would be good to know is what the, you know, when these fish move through the Dalles Dam going back downstream.
Right.
That's the key. That's the critical piece.
Right.
And how we get our hands on that without pit tank detectors in the sluiceway, or the sluiceway even being open, looking detectors, is the hard part, unless we can guarantee some radio tank information.
Right.
Don Wharf was out the other day looking at the sluiceway to try to figure out how to get a pin antenna on it, and apparently that was a BPA request. Is that related to this?
That,
or
that was my asking him. Yeah, see, we can start getting detections and see what's going through when it goes through.
Yeah.
It appears that the flat plate technology might fit really well in there, would be my guess. I didn't hear back from Don yet.
He was on the phone.
Yeah, he was.
This is Don. I'm going to get something to you here in the next couple weeks.
Okay, well that's good when it's running. When it's not running, we're not going to know unless we actually do
a lot of detection.
Do a test. What?
Not much detection was done.
Not yet, obviously.
Well,
so
no, but I mean, once we start having data, we can justify why we're doing it. Do we need it 24 hours a day? Can we do short bursts? I mean, it's without detection, you can't tell. And
right.
So that's
no,
why
it's
I was
good to have that.
Asking Don what's possible.
Right. Huh? Get a detector and then we can do a test of sorts, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the first step.
So we're going to. I mean, that's at least a year out.
No.
Well, everything takes time. As we heard earlier.
So, this coming year, we run as normal, close sluiceway from 15 through.
The fish passage plan needs to be updated for the operation henceforth, whatever it is. I would recommend we stick with what we've been doing, at least.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys are okay with that, then that's an easy one to write up. It was put that way because you wanted some time to think. So
until we get away, we can
track testing or anything like that, where you open the sluiceway for.
How would you test?
You'd have to have.
Well, you get. I get detections, you know, in the creek when this fish is coming out.
When do you get them now? When do they come back?
When do they?
You're saying late March is when they return.
That's when their peak is, but they're coming in, you know, January, February, March, April. And they stop in late June.
Yeah, I mean the key here is to get a temporal passage distribution at the dam. That's the best without the sluiceway open. So, you know, we get the detection and then be ready for a request to do a test through the season, through the winter.
Sure, we got to get support for putting the detector in if it's viable.
One thing at a time.
The conference.
I think we'll have to do a test and then, so I mean, this isn't going to happen right now, but if we can get the pieces laid out. So, yeah, strong support for getting that in. Maybe a limited test. It doesn't have to be every day all the time, but work out a sort of test scenario to see what temporal distribution is. And then we can argue about what the credit is and which buyout it fits under and all that kind of stuff.
Is there a way we could do an on-off during the normal shut-off season, an on-off, and you might be able to see some connections?
Yeah, we'll
that's
know
what you're referring to, right?
Yeah.
That's what he's referring to, yeah. That's assuming those fish are moving in.
Right. I would say put a proposal together and send it to us.
You should look up river where there's already pit deck detection on the points of geese, for example, and get a sense of how often they overshoot and then come back in an area that's not impacted. Yeah.
But the question is, are they really overshooting or they have to be somewhere? They can't be in 15 Mile Creek until it waters up. So you got to either stay below the devils or above the devils.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're seeing, I mean, not this rate, but pretty very high percentage of the John Day fish move above McNary as
right.
well. And
right now,
like
they
half of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back.
Yeah.
So they're just moving.
Right.
They could go above the dam several times, back and forth, before they finally move into the creek, or 15 Mile Creek. So.
Does McNary have year-round sluice?
No, that's one thing we've been talking about quite a bit here recently, is how to accommodate
well,
all that winter fish.
We're
trying to get a lot of information on that. And this is just another issue. The Dalles has been an issue already. With that cons work, and we know we have fallback during the season. We didn't see a lot of fallback at that time. That was hydroacoustic, so it wasn't a known source. During part middle part of the winter, it was more towards the ends, and that's what resulted in the operation we have today.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was just looking at hydroacoustic tags, which is another way to do this, but we've already done that several years ago, about 3 years ago. So we have that information. You're probably familiar with that.
We knew they don't go, they hang up, and they come up when you're
right.
Right. So that's the question. When do they really need to get there?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to just hang in the forebay?
Right. Will they hang
somewhere?
In the forebay?
Somewhere.
Specific information on specific fish, and that's what's lacking. We just have hydroacoustic.
Sure. But the hydroacoustic section, whatever the target was, they were hanging up.
Well.
Get a lot, once we open
the search spot, but then you only look at a very narrow cone with that, so that's limited
sure.
data. It's just an echo. It's just an echo. We don't have much of this.
Right.
Could have been a carp.
Could have.
So getting specific information with type fish with a detector makes a lot of sense.
Right. Yeah,
one step at a time.
So hopefully next year then we'll have things in place where we can actually do a test.
Maybe. Next year or the
next
year.
I don't see it on SCT anywhere. So, I mean, it needs to get a home. It needs to get, if it's possible.
This is going
to
elevate the need for that. So that's a good thing to get in the SCT.
Right. I mean, like I said, I was stepping out in front and just asking if this is possible. So,
that's good.
I'm not all against it. I just need to have data to
the man in black.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the plan right now is to try to get into the SCT, get support, get it installed, do a test.
So
in the meantime, keep studying those fish.
Yeah.
All right. Done. Thanks
Thank
for coming.
Thanks,
don't let the door hit you on the way out. I think we're going to try to say some delicate.
I didn't say that.
It was a flat.
Okay, let's jump up to the fish field unit's kelp monitoring plan, which you've had plenty of time to review and look at, putting in new cameras, DVRs, and actually had compared some actual data to the video data. So anybody have a problem with this?
Sounds good to me. Or we could just go with March 17th.
If you can get the agreement on that, I'll go with that.
And we're done. Without all this stuff. But I'd be okay with that too.
Silence.
There was some confusion in this, at least for me, in trying to figure out
it's understandable.
How much. Why are you coming here?
You grew your beard out.
I guess that's what all
that's about. Got your hunting beard too.
I should go hang out with the dolphins.
Yeah, the FFU responsibilities versus the
hazing's good. Oh, you know how it, yeah, I'm going to have a sidebar now.
Outside. There's the door.
Can you do this in
old-timer.
Color?
Old-timer. If you get a beard like mine, then you'll really be an old-timer.
True.
Okay. What concerned me was trying to figure out what the duties were between the FFU staff and the SMP staff in this one.
That was the main comment I got from you and from Andy Crainer, too. The only one that really came back with any comments on this thing was to ensure we report, you know, when we meet the trigger, who's the one that calls the project and to make sure it's happening.
Right.
I mean, we can work with that internally.
Well, it's the Monday through Thursday versus the weekends, and, you know, who's looking at the tapes.
So you've got smoke monitoring personnel there all the time, right?
Correct.
Like I said, we can read it at least Monday through Fridays, unless you want to.
This says Thursday. Are you going to include Friday?
We can make it Friday.
Yeah, because that what concerned me is that after that there's a three-day period there, and then if the smoke monitoring folks aren't looking at it through that time, then, you know, they're looking at the separator, but they're not looking at the tapes.
Right.
Then, you know, we walk in on Monday and go, oh, crap, you know, we could have done this on Friday, and now we're 3 days later. And that's what concerned me.
Right. And so if we work Fridays, you've got the potential of, maybe missing out 2 days early. But like you say, you're still going to have smoke monitoring personnel there. They could see enough and make the call on their own.
Right.
It's just that we might see one that they missed.
Is there a chance of them looking at, or is this looking at the tape on those days, or is that a problem?
Well, I'd be glad to have them do it, but I got to get Michelle on board.
Michelle on board. She says no because of the cost issues. And
there's no.
Although the guys are doing whatever they're doing.
Theoretical cost.
I know what Tom's up to.
Yeah. But I mean, I could ask her about that.
Is there a reason why they can't look at that tape while you guys?
That's what I want. This all came down to the contract and who's doing stuff. And we just put in a new camera and a new monitor and a new recorder, and really wanted the facility to do what they were doing anyway with just better equipment. And somebody interpret that as being a new add-on, additional.
Okay,
equipment.
Robert. Thank you. I got it. So it's not you guys aren't opposed to them looking at this stuff if they will do.
I'd rather them.
Right. Got it.
We don't want to spare the personnel.
Got it. So then it really comes down to SMP and whether you guys do want to look at those 2 days, that the weekend days. We're only talking probably a couple of weeks in March.
It's a slow time for slow laundry. Anyway.
Right.
It's not a big deal.
Right.
I'll talk to Michelle and see if I can get
see if you can just, I mean, it's just.
We can
it would be better for Fish. You can tell her that.
And the way we've got it set up too is they can actually sit there and review however long past the previous 24 hours and see an additional monitor that shows you the current facility, so that if a stick or fish gets caught there, they can run right out and take care of it.
Though that may not be their responsibility next year.
Yeah, that's your guys.
Well, that's another issue. But you know, let's try to cover it as well as we can. And I realize we're increasing the monitoring here, but I think that's appropriate.
I'll talk to Michelle about game coverage of the video.
Okay. And then at the end of the day, who made
that doesn't
the way
even address
is,
the trigger though?
Yeah. They make the call.
This is going.
This is just getting the information, then there'll be the discussion about what is the biological trigger.
Which hasn't changed. It's the 20 fish, 2-2.
Well, that's based on previous measures of recording.
Well, you had to know
it's not. It's 20
well,
fish.
No, I'm just saying. I know it's going to be a problem with the corner collector operation.
Are you saying that's a problem? Are you introducing that as a problem?
Do
you
want to go there? I'm bringing it up to have a discussion.
You don't want to. Thank you so much,
Vern. Do you want to spend a half hour?
Once he turns 50, he becomes a real
pain. I don't turn 50 till Monday. So.
Oh, I'm still 49 and
then
62 days.
Warm it up.
I'm just saying, I know it's going to be an issue with the other action. The action agencies are going to have a problem with
so the
violence.
So the Corps has a problem with that? Does the Corps have a problem with it?
I don't have a problem with the trigger right now.
Okay, so then you're speaking for him. So what does he say?
No, we need to look at it.
What are you looking at?
your measuring technique is much better than it was when we came up with the criteria that was only supposed to be for 2 years.
So you guys are going to raise this?
Yeah.
The two fish, 2 day, I'll grant you that one. The 20 fish trigger? Please, give me your justification for that. I will gladly, if you can give me a justification for that, I will gladly look at it. Oh, wait a minute, there isn't one. There's a memo on two fish for 2 days, the 20 fish was added on.
I wrote that.
No one talked anything about how the 20 fish was measured, nothing. It was just a number that came out of someone's backside.
Well, the two fish per day, too, was based on what I thought would be, once you saw that, that to me it was the initiation of the kelp out-migration. That was what triggered that.
Yep.
And I don't see that changing. And with better accuracy, you just get a better chance to see that starting.
You're less likely to miss it.
Yeah, I think that it just improves it. I don't see that we should somehow now change the four fish or something like that.
Well,
and I think that
fish
would be a really
miss,
big battle. So. Do you really want to start that battle?
Was the 20 fish the peak then?
Or? The 20 fish was just a grab, yeah, just
yeah.
To say, well,
that way we've ensured we met it.
Now we know that there's fish in the river. And the 20 fish were, I think the whole thing was that it wasn't just like two fish had passed and we're really doing something
well,
like
four.
Two fish.
Four fish
had passed. Or four fish. We're doing it for somehow.
So 20 fish is a magical
fish,
number.
Which represents with the efficiencies of the corner collector or the bypass system.
About 155 fish.
So that's a lot of winter. That's a lot of kelts. So I really hope we don't get wrapped around this axle again.
Please not.
In the meantime, we will go ahead and install that equipment.
Okay.
And
you guys will work out who's doing what.
Yep.
Cool. Okay, but then this question of the trigger, when's that going to get resolved?
I will bring it home and return next meeting with the
okay.
Where we're at.
About March 15th.
Yeah, I know.
No, March 14th.
16th.
Yes.
March
17th.
17th.
23rd.
Let's just pick
April
the 17th 10th. And be done with
it. St. Patrick's Day. It's a great day to have the council.
There's a real good reason for it.
Well,
sounds simple.
Cider.
All right. So,
John.
Is Jeff supposed to be here?
Oh, right. Jeff's here too.
Jeff's here.
Done and done.
Ready to talk your pit tag detector?
Well, we had a reading out of the dam on the 31st. I'm the fair SPSNC and. Regarding the tag system, the Allen Brower Wolf was there. And just looking at possibly putting the, what I've been talking about for several years now, trying to get some better detection in the adult fish facility in the exit way, so I have a better idea of what would tag, still got tags, and how long and when it leaves the exit there. So the new plan is to put it right in that exit way. I've got to send out a memo, which I think was distributed. But what we're planning on doing, yeah, it's just a rectangular antenna which would span the ladder, and it would be just downstream of where the fish are dropped back into the river when the plumes are extended again. So, and it would be tested out a similar antenna. There's no interference with getting the DO3 website or any of the DO3 tagasites.
You've already done. You've done that test, and it has not.
Yeah.
Not.
I think it probably become nothing. The tag or the Don Wharf and Darren Chase has become nothing. No impact on either the plume or the ones on the other side of the main ladder there. So. Basically, plan to put that in while it be watered this winter, and then also where we drop the fish into the barrel pool and then connect it to the existing multiplexer that we've been using for the antenna we've got is the fish going to the into the sample tank.
So
that's the plan. We have ramps to. Water's fairly shallow there, so you don't need a very big antenna. So we get the fish that we we tag as well as any fish that might come down the plume and then drop back, or any fish that drop back from the main ladder for any reason.
So one thing, is there room there with the pipe, return pipes, between there and that ledge to put this in?
It's pretty high, the pipe, the return pipe is several feet off.
Yeah, I was just trying to, well, so is that ledge, and so they both are higher.
Yeah.
You've got plenty of room there.
Yeah, there's plenty of room.
How thick?
I think it's 4 inches.
Total? Or each side?
But
the thickness of the antenna?
I think it's 4 inches on each side and the bottom.
Is it just like the Dowell's thin wall antenna?
It's a little bit different. They were going to look at the Dowell's thin wall and then be a shielded antenna, but found that this unshielded antenna worked perfectly fine. So without any interference. So
that's
it. It would be a little bit thick, a little bit thicker than a thin wall, but a whole lot cheaper to put in.
Okay, has CORE looked at the hydraulics of this, John?
No. Okay. I mean, as far as what we might do in the AFF in the future, it shouldn't be in the way, but hydraulically, no, we haven't had Steve Schlenker.
I'd have Schlenker take a quick look at it, or run it by Ed Meyer in our shop, take a quick look at the hydraulics, what that restriction does to the hydraulics right there. Because as you know, we've spent a lot of time on that this year trying to resolve some problems, and we've seen a couple of dead fish in there this year, so
wonderful.
Been kind of an issue. The other thing too is you're talking about putting a detector in the return in the flume that you're using to put fish back in the rail pool, but we have our two tanks there as well.
We're going to wire both of them now.
You're going to wire everything.
We've got two 2 foot square antennas we bought, one for that purpose. And when we bought for another purpose, it didn't work out. So we got two of those we're just going to hook up.
So you'll cover all of them. Because what I don't want to do is have, we set up those recovery tanks and then not use them because people don't want them.
And John said about 80% of the fish are going in the recovery tanks. So
right.
We've got to wire those.
Or more. So those need to be covered as well. And you've got a plan for that then. Yeah. Okay.
So you currently upload your tagging file to the taggers, but you don't upload your interrogation files?
No. that had come up as whether this would be part of the DO3 system. I don't see that. I suppose we could set up an independent site.
You can set up a recapture site. They don't require.
We could call the recapture. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about this would be of that much interest.
Because then you could just send your.
Using AFF.
You could send your file in later after the fact, even after the year.
I think it would be good to have that in the tag. Yes, I mean, all this data should be.
Yeah.
But Blaine was saying that if you didn't do that, he'd probably be sending a lot of requests in for data for that. So he has some interest in it. So.
I suppose this group here would probably
be
the ones interested in it.
Yeah, I think we would. So having access would be good. So we need to get the hydraulic. So let's get a hydraulic look at that. Do you have any more specific drawings of the install other than, I mean, there really wasn't
just
much in here.
That's what I said.
It was just can you provide something that's more of a sketch than just...
I can ask Biomark.
Because this is, it's just a picture of something that's not really it, and a blanket over part of the ladder. That
would be
shielded,
right?
Yeah.
Something
just a sketch to look at how that looks in there. Like John's asking where you're at relative to the two different structures that are in there. I think that's important to look at. Have the hydraulics guys take a look at the effects of that and how that changes flow coming into to the rest of the system there. But
The ramping the bottom. So just be on the sides.
Just be on the sides and the bottom.
Yeah, because on the bottom you can ramp it so it's smooth. So let me get
it's still going to restrict 3 foot.
Restriction would go up, though. If you only restrict the bottom of the water, you go up. So it's the sides you worry about. So it's the 4 inches on each side. That's the restriction you have to worry about. I don't know. What's the overall width of this?
8 feet.
8 feet. So you're talking 4 inches and 8 feet.
Probably not much.
Not much.
Just have them look at it.
Just get an okie-dokie from
Tom's our hydraulic engineer.
I'd say it's okie-dokie, but I think you're probably going to want Dr. Chandra.
Okay.
With all the tweaks we've done in there?
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of stuff we've done in there, so let's just make sure we cross that one, and then...
How far out of the water is...
Sure. Sounds like it's right at
our above the water line. Yeah.
Well, it does fluctuate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure it really would make any difference. Yeah.
I wouldn't want to see the water go over the top of this at all.
Yeah, or in it. It's in the water. Yeah. We need to keep it out of the water.
Yeah, I agree with that. The top needs to be out of the water. Just so we don't have. I don't want water going over the top of it though at any time. You'll have jumping going on then, and that's got enough trouble with this thing.
Okay, how high does the water get?
Yeah, and then just there you are.
I don't know if anybody got that number. I don't know, I'm not out there.
Have the hydraulic engineers look at it and go on there.
Somebody should have it.
You should have from the shed room there, just as a worst case.
Sure. Well, if that's, you know, there's clean versus dirty, or, you know, that's an issue too.
That's what I'm saying, take worst case.
I see your point. Once a year or something, you're losing efficiency and increasing cost.
It just means that if you get water coming over the top, I want to make sure that if you do have a problem, you clean the grating and the problem goes away at least. You don't want a problem that sets up that you can't deal with. So at least deal with the normal water level and maybe give it a little extra, a couple inches.
I think that's enough.
And then if you start seeing water come over, somebody's got to get in there.
If there's something has any of your figures on exactly what is normal water level
we have
more than that, then we can make sure we meet those specifications. I think it was just a few inches. If we're designing another foot or so on, then there might be some problems.
I'll find out.
So it would be out of the water by a couple of inches, or at least what looked like the water line.
So you can provide the information, the Schlenker will look at it, give you the other information, give a sketch, yada, 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 you're done.
Cover those bases, come back next month.
If there's any, you know, hydraulic analysis,
well, I just say, like,
come back.
Let's just get that information.
Or send it out to us, and then we can sign off.
See what he says.
Forget about
it. Yeah, this is okie-dokie, and we got the water level, done and done.
So that reminds me, Vern, about the dead fish testing. Are we going to get results on that, or have we got results?
Yeah,
zero. Still did. Nothing.
So none back.
None back. How many released?
Zero.
Released, is that the word for it?
How many burned?
We saw no carcasses.
Deposited.
Released carcasses. That all those fish are likely dying from the effects of the AFF.
It could be. I mean,
that's one issue. A dead fish is probably active.
That's right.
Near dead fish.
Right.
Well, that's actually kind of swimming, so I don't know how you...
you see that a lot, right? I don't see that.
Not very often. You don't see a lot of fish on pickets.
You see some fish there. Here we go.
Small guy.
One idea I had while I was out at the looking at the facility on Halloween there was whether it'd be possible. Whether it'd be possible to monitor any of those overflows. I mean, with the O3 site, you've got the orifices, but you don't have anything going over the top. Something like dropping a bunch of dead fish. Like, get an idea, do they continue down the ladder, or do they just disappear on the way before they get there? I think there's, and it would give you more of a 100% a lot of fish over the top there. It could give you more of a 100% record of what's coming up the ladder. And given now's the Pitag technology nowadays, it's fairly inexpensive to do. Something I thought I would suggest to the DSMFC or the Pitag's meeting.
Jeff, for which site? Yeah. Which
just
area?
A VO3 lower down.
Lower down, VO3 down.
Not something I'm interested in funding, but it's just something that might be of value in some of these discussions. And I don't think it would be very expensive to add. I haven't asked anybody who knows about those sorts of things about it.
Okay. As mostly false for that, that we're going over the top.
Yeah. They'll sockeye go over the top too.
Yeah.
And, I didn't look at the species. I don't really pay too close attention to the field because of that. It's not a very, a lot of fish miss it more than VO1 or VO4.
Back to the dead fish issue, yep. This idea about fish that might be coming back into the AFF. We saw not only Salmonis collecting on the grizzly drain, but we saw a lot of lamprey collecting on the grizzly drain. That's one of my concerns. I'm wondering about the tip tag antenna you want to install here. We have the ability to detect the half duplex tags.
It would, but it require a new multiplexer. Problem, and that would be several thousand.
I don't think they're multiplex either. I think they're all singles. So you have a bunch of antennas running off a single one, you have to come back out of different. Well, at least for that one.
Yeah, well, they said that if you upgraded something, as you mentioned, then there's the demo there, that if you upgraded, if we were to upgrade the multiplexer, it would cost several thousand dollars. It could detect half duplex as well as full duplex. But we only do full duplex. So.
I was going to say, one thing you might do is talk to Brian and have him leverage Aspect, because if leverage Aspect says this is something valuable, they might be willing to put a couple thousand dollars to get that upgraded.
Yeah, how much would it be?
It's a few thousand dollars.
It's a few thousand dollars. Right, people talk to each other. I'm going to walk away.
Then you might have to do a double check again to make sure you're not getting in there and seeing that half duplex signal.
I don't know. We'd have to talk to the KSNSD staff in Kenwood and see if they can make any difference.
Right.
Burn?
Yeah.
Are we going to get any kind of report, or I guess maybe tackling your, no, John's guy now, a report on that dead fish release mini study that we did? Is there
any, yeah, I can send that out.
The MSC had the results in it.
What's that?
Really? On the website.
What website?
Yeah. The one that I meticulously maintain.
I don't worry about web. I'm sorry.
He doesn't play interweb.
I'm looking for a report.
There's a write-up.
What we did is we included it in the MOC for that with the results that are in there. So it's number 13, bond 85. Memorandum of Coordination. Well, that one was way long ago because we're up to the mid-90s now.
You know BLH, but you don't know MOC?
I know that. I just don't know which one it was.
85,
and I don't know what that is either. So
what number?
How do I email it to you?
Yeah, that would be good.
We do that. Okay, so can we move on?
I don't
know. Can we?
Yes, we can, and we are. To Zebra Muscle Control, Steve's here from PSU. He did a test out in the John Day tail race, I believe, in the Dalles last year. So what's the latest, Steve?
Lots of zooping.
All right, so is everybody familiar with zebra and cloaca mussels?
Yeah.
I have these little guys here. If you want some, to put them on your desk, you can have them.
I'll give them to Blaine.
So
just don't let them loose.
What my objective is to give you guys kind of an update of our research, how it pertains to passage and operation. So. So we know the mussels are causing problems. We're looking at different control techniques for them, specifically trying to find things that are non-toxic, that are not going to be chlorine, that type of thing. So in 2007, the BOR and Metropolitan Water District in the lower Colorado started doing a whole bunch of work on different coatings. Different control options. Coating was one of them. So in 2010, we took the two best coatings that were coming out of the research down in Lower Colorado. And they were doing research on steel panels and gratings. And so we wanted to try them out in the Columbia River on concrete as well as steel. So we started a panel experiment. We got in the water at work where, so number one is the Florida Camas Reshubal. That's where we deploy in the Columbia River. So we attach them to these big steel frames. That's number two in the picture. throw them in the water. We threw about 1,000 panels out there. And over time, we take out a subset of these panels. And so we know the panels are effective against the mussels. The question is how long are they going to last? So, you know, you've got your...
Carl Duggar, McNary Dam.
These are actually the Sherwin-Williams product. So as it's going around, these are a silicon-based one. But you can take your fingernail and you can gouge it. So that's the issue. So when you look at the protective coating that's currently used on submerged steel, the core vinyl, it's a great product to last 50 years, but it's not effective against mussels. But so the issue is how long are these going to last in surface conditions? So what we're doing is we're taking these panels out over different immersion periods, and we're running tests to look at their durability. So we're looking at a whole bunch of lab tests to look at actually how the coatings are holding up. Another part of that is taking a subset of panels down to San Justo's Reservoir. So that's a reservoir down in California that has zebra mussels. So we take these panels, throw them in the river. Excuse me, that is a lake. It's a reservoir. So you can see that picture number 3. That is our buoy structure we deployed out. We've got this 400-foot-long buoy structure we hang the panels down from and put them out there for 5 months, let the mussels colonize them, and then we look at the adhesion force. So they basically see, you know, after they've been in the river for X number of months, is there an efficacy change? So that's kind of one aspect of what we're doing. It's still going on. So just so you guys know, I mean, these coatings are very effective against mussels. They are, so first of all, the growth rate of these mussels is phenomenal. So 5 months down in San Justo, we had 21 millimeters of shell length growth. I mean, it's phenomenal. When you think about it, it's just phenomenal. And San Justo really isn't an ideal place for these mussels. And so, it was awesome to go down there and see these guys. You know, we had 2 age classes in 5 months. We had one, the biggest one was, you know, mean was about 17 millimeters in length. The younger age class was about 7 millimeters in size. And so these foul release coatings, if some algae can attach to the foul release coatings. You can take your hand and just kind of wipe the algae off. But the mussels can actually attach to that algae. So you can have some attachment on these foul release. But, you know, you take them out and we're working on the deck of the boat, and the wind will knock these mussels over on the foul release coatings. On the controls, you know, as we expected, they're heavily fouled, and it's hard to remove the mussels. So that really isn't anything shocking so far. In terms of the durability, also nothing really shocking so far. So, you know, you can feel these. They're not going to be comparable to your vinyl or the crystal seal on your, or, you know, crystal seal is the sealant on the concrete. So what we're hoping, you know, is, you know, can you get 10 years out of them? And, you know, they are really, when you look at the damage that these, you know, the only damage we've really seen so far is some blistering, some minor blistering. You have a photo of some of that. But you really have to, these have to be deployed in a certain place where they're not going to be susceptible to gouging. Gouging is the action that's really going to mess them up. So a completely submerged structure, preferably that has protection from large debris. It's not a silver bullet. There are no silver bullets. So another part of this project is to develop a cost analysis, how much is it going to cost to put these coatings at a federal Columbia River power system. So that is the second reason I'm here, is to kind of really solicit comments on this document. So we've got this document, and if any of you want a really exciting read, and I can send you that document, and you can read it. I'm very interested in comments. So what we did with that is, you know, we first had to identify, okay, what coating are we going to use, what facility are we going to use, what component in the facility, develop a work plan and then a budget.
We went with the share release system. It's made by Sherwin. It's manufactured by Fuji, sold by Sherwin Williams. We had to have a commercial available product. Had to be demonstrated to be effective, and I needed to have a rapport with the company so I could get information. So all of those things, you know, really it was InterSleek and share release, the two products I was looking at, and the Fuji was just very willing to work with me. So I went with their product. In terms of projects, I wanted to limit it to the main stem Columbia with fish passage. So that really kind of knocked it down to five. I wanted that because of the complexity of the system, all the components. Then really it was just who was, you know, Robert Cordy was willing to answer all my pesky questions. So we went with the Dalles Dam for the project. In terms of components, then, you know, because the Dalles doesn't have a lot of components, that eliminates some stuff right away. But you needed something that is at risk to be fouled. If it was fouled, it would cause a problem. The component can be removed from the water, cleaned, because you have to take the stuff out of the water, clean it, to paint it, let it cure, and then put it back in. And it would have some protection from, you know, your heavy debris. And so really the structure that really came out was the AWS diffuser greens. So you've got a lot of those. The Dalles, you've got 1,300. You've got about 1,000 on the east and about 300 on the north. So then we're looking at the work plan of how do we do this. You have the in-water work period, which is impossible. So the east is, you know, it's December to mid-January. North is mid-January to February. So you've got to take these structures out. You've got to take them. The conditions in the winter here are terrible for painting. If any of you paint it in the winter, you've got to control for humidity and temp. So I said, well, let's go, let's take it indoors. You know, the option would be to set up a tent structure on site that you could, you know, but to do that is, you know, versus renting a warehouse space. Rent the warehouse space. When you apply these coatings, it has to be applied continuously. So all surfaces are painted at once. So you can't lay your grate down, paint it, let it dry, flip it over, and then paint it. So you've got to make these racks. When we did the panel experiment, we welded this big rack thing that we hang all the panels from so you can spray and then go around and spray and get all the nooks and crannies. So 1,300 gratings, we've got to do it fast. So you basically are making these paint racks. And so about $38,000 goes into making these paint racks. But you hang two of your gratings on a paint rack. It's on a wheeled thing. And then, so you've got a schematic in here which shows kind of a schematic drawing, a CAD drawing of that paint rack.
What about dipping it in a big vat of paint?
That will work for some type of coatings, not for these. These are typically applied either airless spray or spray. A very small component you could dip, like a panel.
Right.
But when you're talking the material costs, you mix a batch and you have a pot life of minutes, really. You can actually, your pot life is more than minutes. But so making a big vat that you dip into would be, your materials cost would get kind of nuts.
Why'd you want to accomplish it in 1 year?
That's a good question. I just decided with the cost document to, if you were to actually apply this, I think the thing to do would be to target your highest risk projects and start there and just kind of move down through your system. And so trying to hit a project at once would be the goal. And honestly, if you can get it all done, if you can do the whole East Ladder in 1 year, I would do it, is my opinion. It does stress. When you look at the work schedule I put in there, it's a very tight schedule. There's not a lot of room for error. You know, I do, in the cost deck, in the document, I talk more about, you know, I do cushion all these estimates by like 40% on top of what I think, just to create some room for error, because there's going to be error. The North Ladder is a piece of cake. 300 in that in-water work period is a piece of cake. But just real quick, talking about the how you would potentially do this. So you've got these paint racks where you hang your gratings from. So then what you can do is you can start batching things, because that's the key aspect with getting through 1,000 gratings in like a month. is you've got people rolling them into a cleaning room, you blast them, and then they're going over to the prime room, and then they've got to cure for a period before they go to the next the tie coat and the top coat. So with a big warehouse with these wheel paint racks, you can kind of move stuff around. You've got a tag on the paint rack, so you can keep track of when each of those things is coated and just kind of move through your process. Looking at the budget, not quite the budget yet. So looking at labor estimates with the in-water work period, I assume that there's no way